This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony Brooks is out today. Melissa Holloway was only 24 when she was found dead, hanging from a pipe in her closet. Holloway suffered from debilitating mental illness and was living in a Somerville community-based mental health facility. Her family began asking questions. The group home was supposed to be a safe place, one with support and ongoing supervision, yet 2 full days passed before Holloway's body was discovered. Now, the Somerville group home is part of Massachusetts' community health system, specifically a relatively new program called Community-Based Flexible Supports, or CBFS. WBUR and the New England Center for Investigative Reporting looked into CBFS. And joining me now with more on what they found is WBUR's Deborah Becker. Hi there, Deb.
Hello there, Meghna.
So first of all, give us an update or an outline of exactly the scope of the investigation, what you were looking for.
Well, we were just looking at how community-based mental health care works. And it's a very broad question because we're talking about a very big system. It's 14,000 people served by the state in a variety of settings. And it's difficult to make one general statement, I think, about how the system works. And many times, many things could be anecdotal, but we did find a thread that showed us that there were some issues. And I think if you were going to say, why are there issues, it would probably be the consensus that resources are the issue. There's not enough money, and so the system runs into problems in terms of staffing, mm-hmm. in terms of being able to provide treatment to everyone who needs it and the right kind of treatment, and I think that is the part that is the problem. You mentioned the suicide that was discovered at a group home in Somerville. We spoke with the operator of that group home, which is VinFen. That's a private vendor that contracts with the state to provide mental health care services. And Bruce Bird is the CEO of VinFen. He called that suicide a tragedy, and he said that the problem was because staff did not properly search for the patient. Let's listen to what he had to say.
We've had, unfortunately, suicides in homes before CBFS, and we will afterwards. But that's because staff are not necessarily watching clients 24 hours a day because they don't need that kind of attention. If an individual needs supervision that is constant 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're in a hospital. That's not what our group homes are designed to do.
And Meghna, Bruce Bird also said that his company has improved its policies on missing persons, so staffers will actually report folks when they're missing and be able to find them more quickly in the future.
Hmm. Now, Deb, this is you did a 2-part story, and the first part of that story, which we broadcast on WBUR yesterday, focused on the problems that some clients have experienced, or actually say on Monday, I'm sorry, but it focused on the problems that some clients have experienced with the state's mental health system overall. But now you've also looked at how that system has affected employees who work in these places. So tell us about that.
So we talked with a lot of workers. Many of them were reluctant to talk on the record for fear of losing their job. And there's still a great deal of concern among workers, as you can imagine, after a mental health worker was murdered in 2011, allegedly by a client. That was Stephanie Moulton. She worked at a Revere group home. There have been several state committees, task forces, and reports looking at what happened in the system that could have allowed that sort of tragedy to go on here in Massachusetts. So there's that underlying current of fear among many workers. But aside from that, workers also said they still feel that they don't have enough staff all the time or resources to properly treat clients or to do their jobs necessarily. And we spoke with the union that represents some of the mental health workers. They would talk on the record. Cliff Cohn is the chief of staff of the Service Employees International Union Local 509. And he said staffing needs to improve, but also the state needs to improve its oversight of CBFS, FS, which he says the state lost to some private vendors. Let's listen.
There used to be state rules and regulations of how many mental health workers should be in each group home. The state eliminated those type of regulations, so now providers are free to move staff around, and there's very little state oversight over how many staff there are per client.
So Deb, it sounds like there's both concern on behalf of people who are residents in these group homes, and as you were just describing, of employees who work at them. And in addition, your investigation discovered that just a simple measure, police phone calls to some of these group homes, these facilities, have increased in the past few years?
Well, there are police told us this and provided us with some data suggesting that to some mental health treatment facilities, they felt that they were being called more frequently. We spoke with Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis. He said mental health-related calls are up in the city over the past few years. He said it's tough for police to know how to respond to various calls, and they would like to have more dialogue with everyone involved, the vendors, the Department of Mental Health, and everyone, to get as much information as possible about what's happening so police can do their jobs better. This is what he had to say.
We've got real practical issues that manifest themselves in the extreme in what we saw in Connecticut. So I think it's time to have a conversation about what makes sense, keeping in mind people's rights, but also keeping in mind the difficult job that being asked to do here.
And Megna, what Commissioner Davis is talking about there when he says people's rights, he says sometimes when police are trying to get information, a lot of times health privacy laws get in the way and can actually be an obstacle. So he wants to make sure that folks talk about how they can communicate well among all the agencies involved, make sure that a client's health privacy rights are respected, but also that safety is respected. So that's something that he would like to see in the future.
Okay, so it sounds like there are a set of very significant issues for what should be a community-based mental health care system that we all want to praise. I mean, it's a good idea. So what steps do you think have you found are being taken to address these concerns?
Well, you're going to be talking with the commissioner soon, so she'll be able to answer that a lot better than I can. But I think, if I could paraphrase, I think that folks want to communicate better. I think the state has improved training for workers. I think that the state also has done something very innovative in terms of hiring peers, folks with what's known as lived experience, so they can help the mentally ill integrate in the community. So I think there are some significant plans on the table to improve the system.
Okay, well, WBUR's Deborah Becker, stick with us for a while, Deb, if you could. We're talking about WBUR and New England Center for Investigative Reporting examination into the state's system of group homes and gaps that were discovered when it comes to safety and services in those homes that are designed to support people with mental health needs. So, listeners, have you had any experiences with the state's mental health system? And do you know people who've lived in any one of these group homes? Do you have a family member who has needed care or is currently receiving support? And what has that been like? And of course, in the wake of the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, do you think that what happened there might fuel fuel a move towards hospitalization rather than having people be cared for in the community? And are you possibly worried that mental health disorders might become criminalized as police become more involved? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Radio Boston. Well, as I said, WBUR's Deborah Becker is here with us. And also joining us now is Marcia Fowler. She's the commissioner for the State Department of Mental Health. Commissioner Fowler, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Also with us is Deborah Delman. She's executive director of the Transformation Center. It's a training and technical assistant organization that's operated by people with mental health conditions who are currently in the recovery process. Deborah Delman, welcome to you.
Hi there. Thank you.
So, Commissioner Fowler, let me start with you. First of all, I'd just like to hear your reaction to what Deborah was sharing with us in terms of what they found regarding these gaps, it seems, in care and safety in group homes.
Well, let me first point out that community-based flexible supports, or CBFS, is just one piece of the community-based system and one part of the continuum of care that we provide that are interrelated. We provide inpatient care for people who need that level of care. We run PAC teams. We have 28 case management site offices across the state. We fund clubhouses, recovery learning communities, in addition to the CBFS. I think that the system is a new system that we rolled out in 2009. I think it's an improvement on the way we purchased services in the past, which were siloed, which did not integrate services, did not provide a continuum of care for folks. When their needs changed, they needed to change treatment teams, service providers. That being said, there are a number of ways we can continue to improve upon the services that we deliver. We need to work with our providers. We need to hold them accountable to the contracts that we have with them to provide appropriate rehabilitative services. Not only that the people we serve get the services that they need, but we need to be good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars in terms of the money we're spending on these contracts.
Well, if I might jump in here for a quick second, what about, I don't know if you can comment, but about some specific things, because, for example, in the tape that Deborah shared with us, you know, we were hearing things like there perhaps aren't the clearest guidelines or requirements in the world for the number of staff to the number of residents in some of these homes. I mean, aren't those sort of very specific and basic things that the state should be making much more clear so that you could take a big step towards ensuring safety?
Well, I disagree with that is a way to ensure safety is mandating staffing patterns. We really want the providers to use good clinical assessments and judgment in terms of staff assignments so that they can meet the individual needs of those individual folks. And as Bruce Bird mentioned, for individuals who really require 24/7 line-of-sight supervision, those individuals are in the hospital.
Mm. Well, Deborah Delman, let's just get a first response from you from what you've heard so far. I mean, do you think that the problem is as significant as it sounds like to me?
So I just want to say that we really appreciate the community-based flexible support services because they allow a lot of flexibility instead of tying those services to, you know, a bricks and mortar house. Like, you have to be in this house and you have to have so many staff people watching what you do. Instead, it turns it around. It says, what support do you need? And how do we support, like, perhaps one person? Like, I'll just think of a person that I know really well that is struggling a lot and really, you know, can't maintain their tenancy. They can't, you know, they're risking homelessness because they stack up a lot of stuff in their house and the landlord's going to kick them out, and then they're struggling in relationships, so they, you know, aren't having a great time with their friends, so they have to sort of be thoughtful about, gee, how can I maintain these relationships? And they're also struggling with health conditions, so they need help getting to medical appointments. But another person I'm thinking of, like, I've been in the situation where I could live at home very well without somebody with me constantly. And if we're thinking about stretching these dollars, we really need to be thoughtful about what does the person need. And that said, when a person needs more, we want the right people connecting with them, a person that has a long-term relationship with them that they trust.
Deb Becker, so you are the one who's looked most closely at the numbers and at the system here. And I'm hearing that there is, we're seeking as a state the right balance between this community-based care, the flexibility that may allow to sort of tailor the kind of care that individuals need, and also the financial considerations as well. But in your investigation, did you talk to anyone who said, yeah, we can actually find that balance, that's something that's worth aiming for?
I think it depends. It depends on the person. I think that there are people who feel that balance has been hit right, depending on where they were. There are clients who are very happy with the system and feel that it's helped them in their recovery. You know, there are workers who say that they like being able to adapt based on clients' needs, and maybe somebody needs something more in the evening after a job gets put in place or something. And so they like that adaptability. But I think what's unanimous is that it's not going to work well for the vast majority of people unless it gets the right funding. And that's a big concern on everyone's part. I would think that you would agree with that, Commissioner.
Well, if you look back to 2009, the beginning of the economic crisis, state mental health budgets nationwide were reduced by $4.3 billion. So that nationally has had a huge impact. Here in Massachusetts in FY13, we had the good fortune of having our budget increased by $20 million. That allowed us to expand and strengthen our community-based system, and also allowed us to move into a new state-of-the-art psychiatric facility, the Worcester Recovery Center and Hospital, which allows us to provide quality inpatient treatment in an environment that's humane, it's compassionate, and respects the dignity of the folks that we serve.
But there are some who say that the legislature didn't give the Department of Mental Health additional funds for CBFS until after there was a tragedy when a worker was murdered allegedly by a client. It was cut and cut and cut, and then finally when there was this huge tragedy, and even the Victor Gravio, who lobbies on the part of private vendors, said that's a fair question to ask. It does appear that it looks as if the legislature may have appropriated that money after there was a tragedy. And what happens in tragedies like Connecticut or tragedies like Stephanie Moulton is there is attention, I think, sometimes on mental health issues, and maybe there will be appropriations. But do you think that the state has the interest, really, to sustain and to increase appropriations so we have the necessary resources to make it a strong system as possible?
Absolutely. I think Governor Patrick has a firm commitment to community first agenda. And that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody should live in the community. It means that we put together an effective continuum of services that enable people to become stable, that gives people hope, that focuses on recovery, and gives people the supports they need to eventually, if they do require hospital level care, to move into the community and live successfully.
Could I ask
something
here? This is Deborah. I just want to say that I think society as a whole thinks it's saving money by having very low attention and investment in mental health care. And it's a huge mistake because one of the things I know for myself is that I did not know that I could recover from a mental health condition. When I lived in the community with very little support and I was not well, I would wake up, just for example, I would wake up really frightened in the night believing that somebody was breaking into my apartment, and they weren't. And my neighbors and friends stopped answering my call when I would call them, understandably, at 3 in the morning. Hey, there's someone breaking in my house. Well, Deborah, you know, maybe not. And I called the police. When people are afraid, no matter where you are, what position you are in, a staff person, a person using services, a person alone in the community, we do things that aren't going around it the right way. A lot of people, in fact, a very high percentage of people that use psychiatric services, for example, in psychiatric hospitals, have co-occurring trauma experiences. And we're talking about trauma as is described by the CDC in the adverse childhood experience study. There's a lot of co-occurring of that. And you know, that's people with mental health conditions are far more likely to be victimized than to hurt anyone. And the response to that, the care for that, requires trauma-informed care.
Right. Deborah, hang on just for a second, because you said something that I'd like to follow up with Commissioner Fowler about, and that is the police, because Deb Becker also mentioned, I mean, we heard tape from Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis saying that he was feeling a little frustrated because, for example, some information that the police would like to have in order to be of assistance when they are called, they just can't get.
Not everybody is engaged in treatment, so there's not necessarily any information to get. But I think really the issue is about access to mental health care. There are a lot of people out there. 1 in 5 individuals are affected by mental illness, and not all of those people are receiving services and having those services documented. So I think it's imperative for us to improve access to mental health treatment. And it's also imperative for the department, and we do around the state partner with local PDs. We have jail diversion projects all across the state. We fund court clinics. We work with our Department of Veterans Affairs to work with vets who present themselves to the court system to divert them towards appropriate treatment. So there are a lot of activities going on. We're doing a lot of training with local PDs in behavioral health first aid to better equip police officers that go out and encounter people that may be in emotional crisis.
We've got some callers who want to join us, so before we run out of too much time, I want to get them in here. Bill's calling from Boston. You're on the air, Bill.
Hi. Thank you for this excellent discussion. I have a close family member who's been hospitalized in crisis a few times. I know there are no easy answers, and it's all so many factors at play here, but I just thought I'd mention a couple if there's time. One thing that really surprised me was that on 3 different occasions when this person was going through suicidal ideation, not actually executing suicide, but like acting as if the person might do that.
Yeah.
On each occasion, a different person called 911, once because he was at group therapy actually twice he was at group therapy where he was acting that way. And then at one another time, a friend in the neighborhood called. Each time, the ambulance brought him to a different hospital. So he had to start from scratch with a team that didn't know him. There was no protocol for continuity of care. Basically, the ambulance didn't have any, and I'm not faulting anyone, but that seems like extraordinarily wasteful of resources.
Bill, I'm sorry to cut you off here, but we do have a bit of a time crunch, and I want to get Commissioner Fowler to respond to your point about continuity of care. But again, I apologize for cutting you off, but thank you so much. Commissioner Fowler, your brief response to what Bill was saying?
I think it's problematic when someone's in an acute psychiatric crisis. Often they'll be hospitalized in the first available bed. Acute hospitalizations occur in private psych hospitals. Then the department licensed 62 psychiatric units across the state.
Deb Becker, what do you make of what the possibility is of closing these gaps that we've been talking about? I mean, do we know if there's any, for example, regarding police involvement when they're called to these group homes, as and when they are? Are there exceptions to health information privacy rules that would allow them to get access to the information they need?
I don't believe that there are exceptions. And the commissioner, again, might know better than I do, but I don't believe there are exceptions to that. But I would also like to say that there are some police departments and some addresses that we know of where police calls did not go up. This was some addresses where they did go up, but and police did say, as the commissioner mentioned, that there are steps being taken in various departments to train all officers to respond to mental health calls, which is a very positive step in the right direction. In Somerville, for example, in Cambridge, they're training their departments, and I believe some of them have Department of Mental Health grants to do so, to be able to train officers about how to respond to mental health calls. That doesn't address the information issue necessarily, but it does address the education issue on the part of officers, so it is helpful.
Commissioner Fowler, we've just got a couple seconds literally to go, but I am curious. I mean, do you think that community-based care is still the best way to go for many of the Commonwealth's residents that we've been talking about, or are there actually more diverse options that the state should be considering?
I think we're really looking at expanding our peer-operated services. That's one area that we'd like to expand upon. Folks with lived experience are very effective in helping the people we serve recover from mental illness.
Well, Marcia Fowler is the Commissioner for the Department of Mental Health. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Deborah Delman, Executive Director of the Transformation Center. Thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you so much.
And Deb Becker, WBR's reporter and the lead on our investigation into state mental health group homes. Thank you so much for your reporting, Deb.
Thank you.
And listeners, continue this conversation. There's some great web links and information at WBUR.org. Find out more about Deb's story and let us know what you think there. And stay with us because coming up, we'll talk about the Renaissance sounds of holiday music with Boston-based Blue Heron. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.